Welcome to the Balanced Perspective Podcast, where we're going to be challenging perspectives on what it actually takes to become successful in business and in life every single week. I'm Terry Ann Richards, your friendly neighborhood serial entrepreneur and your guide to growing an impact-driven business, fueling both your community and your life at home. Enjoy this episode. Hey, y'all, this is Terry Ann Richards, and you are listening to The Balanced Perspective. I'm here with my guest, Stephen Daniels, who is the owner of the Slight Edge Group out of Moncton, New Brunswick, working as a leadership development coach with LMI, that's Leadership Management International, for over 12 years. He has a passion for pouring into people, especially the ones that way out to reach their potential. Welcome, Stephen.
Well, thank you very much. It's an honor to be here.
Awesome. Awesome. Okay. So before we jump into all things LMI, because you know that's a topic that we both equally love. I think you love it a little bit more than me, but we both equally love everything LMI and all things leadership. I would love to know about the you before you became an entrepreneur and a coach, because there's obviously a journey that took you to this place.
Yeah. Okay. Speaking of you know what, I'll start right from the beginning. So when I went to university, I went for a science degree and I went to a university that didn't hire for science. So I took the next best thing, which was psychology. And I took that for 3 years, realized that I didn't want to be a psychologist or a therapist or anything like that, or a professor. So I quit school, moved out west, worked my way up through the hotel world, if you will, in Banff, Alberta. Ended up as a front office manager in a hotel out there. And that was my first leadership experience that I absolutely fell in love with. I've been an eternal optimist and the guy that sort of pours into everybody that he knows for my whole life. And as a result of that, I got some great experience and realized that I wanted to finish my degree. So I came back and finished. I had 3 semesters to finish up my business degree. I switched to business and went into sales. I just wanted to learn how to sell. I had no particular reason for that. I just trusted my instincts. So I went for a direct sales job working for Brunswick News, selling advertising for a little while. Really enjoyed that. Had an amazing team, an amazing mentor. Grew leaps and bounds. I know that was a God thing. I ended up with an amazing team of people that poured into me when I didn't even deserve it, I'll put it that way, and ended up moving to another company as a director of sales and marketing, had a great experience with them as well. That was all prior to becoming a client with LMI. I jumped into an effective personal productivity program that I know you're familiar with. In 2008, fell in love with the business within 2 weeks, made some calls, quit my job, started a practice, best decision I ever made, scariest thing I ever did, biggest risk I ever took too, but I knew that this is a message that I needed to be a part of getting it out there. I needed to become a bullhorn for people's mental and emotional freedom from themselves, and that's what it gave me. So I was super pumped to be a part of Paul Meyer, our founder, and his legacy, Leadership Management International. So
awesome. Thank you. So what is it about leadership that excites you the most? Because obviously, you know, in terms of your backstory, you know, you sort of moved into these leadership roles and obviously had other individuals that showed up in leadership space and mentorship for you that really lit a spark, it sounds, for you to then move to a space where you went from the corporate world to entrepreneurship. And that's a really scary thing for most people to do. You know, I have had, I don't know if I would say the luxury, but I've had the trial and error of just going straight into entrepreneurship at a very young age. So the fear wasn't really there because I was so young and naive that I didn't know what to be afraid of. I'm more afraid now than I was all the way back then, which is hilarious because I'm 16 years in business. But I speak to so many people when they talk about making that switch from corporate to entrepreneurship. I would assume that would be so much more intimidating because you're switching from, I guess, the golden handcuffs or a regular paycheck to switching over to, you know, going full in and doing something you've never done before, which is super risky. So can you just share a little bit about, like, how did that transition happen? What did it feel like?
Sure. I would tell you that I had no idea what I was doing. I had no clue. Honestly, when I left the business world, I wasn't thinking of, well, I shouldn't say business world, leaving the corporate world and jumping into entrepreneurship is probably not how I would have put it. So I always wanted to be working for myself, working in an industry that I loved and all those kind of things, but I never thought about it as two separate things. It's weird, I know. My father owned several businesses when I was growing up, all that kind of stuff. So I always thought of business as either I'm working for myself or I'm working for someone else. It's all kind of the same thing. When I found something that I was passionate about, and actually, when I first jumped into LMI, I was working with someone else as an associate of their practice with the full intentions that I would be there forever, because I've always wanted to be a small part of something bigger as opposed to a big part of something small. And his philosophy, values, character, outlook on the world didn't align. Not to say that he was a terrible person or anything like that. It's just that we didn't align. So within 6 months of working in his office, I realized that this wasn't going to be permanent. LMI, I fell in love with. Working with this gentleman wasn't a fit for me. So that's when I said, I'm never going to stop doing this business. And this is a calling to me. And it's a mission for me to make sure that I get this message out. So the only choice I have is to start my own office. And that office was not glamorous. It was my basement and as far away from the refrigerator as I could possibly park myself. I can still remember wearing a suit because back then everybody talked about, you know, you got to fake it till you make it and things like that. So I had a mirror in my home office and a desk, and I would wear a full suit with a phone and my computer, and I would watch myself making phone calls, and the energy was just building for me. It was unbelievably hard, and I would never change a thing. That's a huge part of who I am today.
Wow. So I can just picture, it's interesting. It feels like something out of, like, if you've ever watched the show Mad Men, it's just like that, you know, you get up, you shave your beard if you're a guy, or, you know, you put your lipstick on as a female, and you put on the outfit and you wear the part, right? I think Jack Canfield says you act as if, right? Like, you become the image of the human that you're working or striving towards. So, okay. So let me...
Wear pants.
But yes, wear pants and have a mirror to prove that you are.
Absolutely.
Okay, so let me understand this then. Okay, so you're in this partnership, or no, you weren't in a partnership. You are working for this individual, and, you know, values don't align. And I feel like we've all been there, whether it's working for a boss that their leadership tactics, the way in which they look at the world, just doesn't align with your views, your values, right? Or, you know, I've certainly had my fair share of business partners where you get into the business partnership because, you know, hey, these people are really fun to have a glass of wine with. And then you realize that the way in which they look at the business world, their values, the way in which they treat employees or what have you, is very opposite to you. So I'd like to even just maybe touch on that a bit, because I'm positive there are people who have been there or are currently there where there is somebody that they are working close to that there's not an alignment. How did you make the decision? Because I would assume there would be, especially knowing you, there would be some loyalty, you know, in that transition, that relationship. So how do you make the decision to break up, you know, with the person that you had potentially, or I guess at the beginning, thought you were going to be with forever?
Yeah. As a mentor as well.
Exactly.
I looked up to this person and still completely thank them for introducing me to the wonderful world of LMI, without a doubt. That is something I'm internally in their debt for. I think, well, I'm a risk taker, otherwise I wouldn't have made this jump. And values are something that are really, really important to me, really at my core. And if I'm spending time with people, I want to make sure that I'm making decisions to improve upon those values, or at least have a firm foundation centered around those values. And when you're in a situation, for me, I struggle with it still, but because it was clear to me by the end of that 6 month period of time that he and I were truly different individuals and it was never going to work. And he wanted me there because he knew that I was passionate about this business and he would benefit from that. And just knowing that part actually is the part that probably was the straw that broke the camel's back, that the only value that I brought to this guy's team was the paycheck. Mm. So at that point, it was easy for me. It wasn't easy for me to have that conversation with him, but it was easy for me to say, this is not going to work for me. I need to trust my instincts, and I need to carve my own path, because I'm in this business because it's a mission. It's a calling for me. I'm not in it to make millions of dollars. There are many other businesses that you can get there much quicker than this one. So this is actually my passion. This is a deep part of who I am. So yes, there is a level of loyalty in my character for sure. When I commit to something, I want to commit to it wholeheartedly. If it's something that's going to make me compromise who I am, then I completely separate myself from that. And I'll never compromise who I am, what my values are, and things like that. And as soon as I feel that's being forced on me to cross those lines, then you lost me and I'm gone forever.
Wow. You know, I think that that's such an important point to bring up and just kind of shed a light on that. You know, so many people don't understand or stay true to their core values, right? And so I would say this is sort of maybe a call to action for those that are listening. You know, if you don't understand what those core values are, I would say write them down, go figure. I mean, there's tons of ways that you can, figure out what your core values are. But I think somebody who had said it to me very succinctly was like, think about all the things that are like negative in the world or negative that you don't really enjoy. And typically the opposite to that, the things that really irk you, are what your core is, right? And those are the things that you stand for. Those are the things that help you, you know, they're basically your core beacon system, like an internal GPS that says, yes, I can do this. No, I can't do this. Yes, I can be in a relationship with this person, a partnership with this person. No, I can't. But I think the point that I really want to drive home that you said was, you know, you need to basically be so, your loyalty needs to be stronger to yourself and your core versus the people around you. Because I think the reality is, you know, and I know you, you are a loyal person, but you're more loyal to yourself, which makes you that much more of a loyal person.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Super powerful.
I want to surround myself with people with the same or similar core values that I have, because that makes us powerful together. But if I have to go venture out on my own, as long as I'm true to myself, that's truly all that matters to me. And I hate to bring in Jordan Peterson, because I know 50% of the people that are going to hear this are going to be like, I hate Jordan Peterson. And the other 50% are going to be like, he's the best in the world.
But Jordan, I don't know if I hate him or love him, because I don't know who he is.
Well, he wrote a book called The 12 Rules for Life. It came out last year. And the subtitle of that is, I can't remember, Antidote to Chaos is the subtitle. So rule number 8 in that book is tell the truth or at least don't lie. And the reason why I'm sharing this is because that whole book is about taking personal responsibility for who you are. So people that don't like to take personal responsibility think that he's a quack. And the ones that do understand that they are responsible for who they are and the success that they have or don't have will absolutely agree with Jordan Peterson and most of his findings in this book. But anyway, rule number 8, tell the truth or at least don't lie. At the core of that rule, he's talking about don't lie to yourself. Every time you lie to yourself, just a tiny chip of your character gets chipped away, or a piece of your character gets chipped away over time. And an example that he uses is if you're working for somebody that treats you like crap, you can lie to yourself and say, I can put up with this. Right? Because confronting that will cause one of two things. It'll cause some sort of conflict, right? If I have to confront this person, it's going to create discomfort. And I don't necessarily want to do that. I'll be the one that handles the comfort instead of that person feeling the discomfort of me confronting them in the first place. So, and if I confront them, they may fire me. See, people are focused on such short term versus the long term. So I can lie to myself over 10 years saying that I deserve this. And what I'm actually end up doing is making myself so insecure at the end of that 10-year period of time that I'll put up with anything. I'll put up with an abusive relationship. I'll put up with all kinds of different things because I've chipped away at my character and my values and my belief in myself by lying to myself at the core about those things. Instead, what we should do and what we rarely do is a confront that person and say, listen, I don't deserve this crap. You shouldn't be treating me this way, and I'm not going to stand for it, or whatever that conversation looks like. The boss at that point has an opportunity to fire you if they want to. Most of the time, that's not going to happen. They're actually probably going to respect you more for standing up for yourself. But let's say they do fire you. What's the best outcome in that situation? I believe in myself, and I'm going to stand up for what I believe. So I'm going to lose my job, which is maybe a 3-month problem or a 6-month problem or even less than that. But as a result of me standing up for myself, my self-esteem has increased and my self-worth has increased. And I know that when I'm in a situation where I have to face and confront something that's uncomfortable, I believe in myself enough to be able to handle it. So it's the little things that we lie and deceive ourselves to believe that totally eventually lead to our self-loathing in some cases, right? That's worst case scenario versus making the daily decision to only put up with what you believe you deserve and to continue to look at yourself and stop lying to yourself, telling yourself that you're worth less than you really are. And he says right in that chapter as well, he says, you need to be treating yourself like you're somebody you're in charge of taking care of. I just love that statement, right? If you had somebody treating you like crap, you wouldn't want to be friends with that person. So why would you treat yourself that way?
It's so easy to say it and then hear it. And I would say that a very large percentage of people struggle with this. Like that struggle to know, and I think it all comes down to worthiness, right? Like knowing you're worthy. I can't say how many individuals who I would say are at the top of their game, you know, top CEOs, people who are making six figures, you know, multiple six figures that I would think are super confident people that I have witnessed chip away at themselves by allowing somebody to treat them disrespectfully or by not being true and authentic to who they are. I don't know what they end up at the end of the game, but based on even my own space and time over the last few years where I've done things that go against my core, and they're just small, they're just minute, but they do affect you overall, and they affect your mindset. They affect the way that you look at yourself when you're looking in the mirror. And I don't mean looking in the mirror like, you know, how has my body looked today? But like, look in the mirror as in, here's who I am. I should be able to charge what I'm worth. I should be able to walk in a room with my head held high. The little things you did, like staying in a bad relationship or working for, you know, to your point, working for the employer who isn't a good leader and treats you like crap, those things do chip away at you. So my question to you is, what's the advice that we can give people? Because I know there are so many people doing this right now. Somebody's in a relationship right now and they're not supposed to be. They're in a partnership right now and they're not supposed to be because it goes against their core. Is the answer knowing who you are and being confident enough that that's enough? Like, what is the answer?
As simple as I can put it, and not that I'm the man with all the answers, but there is a point that you and I have talked about in other scenarios that I think is appropriate in this situation. So when I was 15 years old, around that age, my father looked at me and said, listen, I got to tell you something. And I was like, I want to go out with my friends. Leave me alone. And he said, you can't love anyone else unless you can love yourself. Right? I don't even remember the context of the conversation. I just remember he said that to me and I was like, you're so full of crap. Leave me alone. I'm just going to go. I want a girlfriend. I want to be cool. Blah, 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 blah. Right. So later I started to realize once I got into relationships where it mattered, I started to realize what he was thinking. And as I grew slightly wiser than I was when I was 15 years old, I started to realize, plus I like to think psychological contemplation, if you will. It's interesting. So now how I read that statement is you have to love yourself before you can love anyone else is if there's a piece of you that you don't accept, you'll never accept anyone else accepting that piece of you either. And yet what we do is we go out there and look for people that may be able to fill in that void that can't be filled in by them because we are the only ones that can fill that in. So we get into a relationship thinking that that person is going to fill that part of us that we're insecure about. But then when they do accept that part of us that we're insecure about, we don't believe them. So we actually start to self-sabotage ourselves in those relationships because we start to think, I don't necessarily deserve this relationship. He might be too good for me, or she might be too good to me, I should say, not for me, to me in this situation, because I know that I'm not that good or whatever. So we go through relationship to, from relationship to the next, to the next, to the next, trying to fill in a void that was never someone else's responsibility. And until I can accept and love that part of me, truthfully, it just makes sense. I'm not going to believe that you're going to accept that part of me, not unless I can do it first. So if that means I need to be alone for 10 years to fully accept myself before I can get into a deep, meaningful, intimate relationship with someone else, whether it's, you know, a marital relationship or any kind of intimacy, deep friendship even counts in this kind of situation, then I need to love myself first. It's time for me to look in the mirror and say, and you say, you know, look, you get up and look in the mirror and look at your body and all that kind of stuff. But I had an analogy shared with me recently, which I love this. It is, if you stand in the mirror, you wake up in the morning, you stand in the mirror, you look at yourself, and the first thing that you do is point out all your flaws. I don't like this about myself. I don't like that. This is, I need to lose weight here. My hair looks terrible over here, this and that. I don't like my nose. And the analogy was, if you had anyone in your life that talked to you that way, how long would you put up with it? You'd be like, hit the road, you know, go pound sand. I'm not going to
not be very long. I'll tell you that.
Right. Somebody would be getting a punch in the face, right?
Yeah,
Or a donkey punch to the neck, as I like.
As my sister would say, a throat punch.
Throat punch. Yes.
There you go. Better. Throat punch Thursday.
So if that were the case, why would you ever put up with yourself saying those things to yourself? You're actually the only person that you're responsible for taking care of. And yet you're the one who probably talks to yourself the worst out of anyone that you know, or at least the worst out of anyone you would put up with. So how do we change that? Here's the short answer to the question that you asked before. It really starts with changing your inner dialogue. You have to really get to know yourself to figure out who you are as an individual, what's important to you. You talked about core values earlier. Find out all those things about yourself. And when there's pieces of your life or people in your life that don't fit into who you are, and making sure that you're being poured into on a regular basis, then it's time to make some changes. Because if it takes you 10 years to accept yourself, knowing that a relationship is not going to cause that to happen, then it's time to be alone for a while. And that's okay.
100%. I couldn't agree with you more. And I think, you know, the interesting fact here is, like, this is for all relationships. Like, this is specific. Obviously, this part of the conversation is, you know, we're talking about intimate relationships, but the reality of it is, and I have proven this to myself time and time again, my biggest successes have always been when I have been strong in my conviction of who I am and what I stand for, that I know the beacon of light that I'm chasing. So I understand, like, what's the big why, but that I'm very clear with people what I'm willing to accept and not accept. And I, you know, you're the average of the five. So I ensure that I spend time with those awesome people that lift me up, and I'm equally lifting them up. But the times that I've not done that are the times where I've had bankruptcies and business failures and obviously my divorce and all of these things that I've been through. Oh, yes, I know. We're going to dig into yours in a second there. But the reality is it all starts with you. It starts with who you think you are. What's the story you're telling yourself, right? And you need to know what you stand for. And then I think from there, the world is really your oyster. So based on that, because you kind of pulled me right into that. That was good. Good job. Good job, Steve. So based on that, listen, you're 12 years in business, right? I've been there, done that before, still in that. How in goodness name, because this is a conversation I have so often with people, how do you have a relationship with an intimate partner, a spouse, and work and hustle like a dog to grow a business? Because right now you have this amazing office in Moncton, New Brunswick. You're no longer in the basement with a mirror behind you, right? Like, there was some hustling that had to happen from point A to point Z, and there was a relationship in the middle of that. So can you share maybe a little bit more of the inner workings of that?
Sure. Fully frank, I got nothing to hide. So When I first started with LMI, I was less than a year into my marriage. So I got married in April of 2007. Sorry, a little bit over a year. No, my apologies. April 2007, I started with LMI as a client in September of 2008. So it was a little over a year. My ex-wife and I had experimented with a couple of different business ideas. She wanted to go into business for herself as well. So we had a few of these discussions, and I was in sales at the time. So I was making, you know, salary and commission and things like that, doing quite well. And when this business idea came out, or was when the aura around the LMI business started shining, the decision was made for me. Obviously, I had to bring her in on the decision. I can't just quit my job and start a business. But for me, I was like, I'm sold out and I'm going for broke on this because this needs to happen. She was unbelievably supportive at the beginning, right? So I started down this business, and anybody that hasn't owned a business, if you're going into a business for a paycheck, then you're doing it for the wrong reasons, right? I knew that there was going to be an adjustment period of time that was going to take some time. I would have to budget at home, and there wasn't going to be revenue coming in. And it was much slower than I anticipated it would be, but I knew that there was going to be that period of time. I don't think she really grasped that. So it did put a bit of a strain on our relationship. 6 month periods of time, she was expecting me to be much farther ahead than I was. And I was hustling and grinding. But I made a commitment to myself. I'll tell you this from a time management perspective. I made a commitment to myself from the beginning of this company that I wasn't going to work more than 45 hours a week consistently. And
wow.
The reason why I made that commitment is simply because one of the things that we coach our clients to do is to be more productive, to work smarter, not harder, to be more effective with the hours that you use. And if I was working 110-hour work weeks trying to start a business and telling everybody else that they could do it in half the time, I would feel like a hypocrite. So I knew I needed the 45-hour window. And I'm not saying I never had a 110-hour work week, because I did. But on average, most of the time, 45 hours or less. And I've been able to maintain that commitment over the last 12 years. But I hustled my butt off during those 45 hours.
So can I ask you, you know, obviously I know that in that time frame of you building your business, that relationship ceased to exist. You ended up having a divorce. Is there any lessons that came out of that? Like, is there something you could have done to save it? Was it just a relationship that wasn't going to work? You know, and I guess I'm looking at this through the lens of those that are thinking of getting into business or are currently in business, but their partner is not in the business, right?
Wow, that's a good question. I've never been asked that question.
Good job, TA.
To be honest, I feel like I tried a lot of things to make that work. I tried to overturn every rock. If it was going to end, I didn't want it to end with me thinking like I didn't do everything that I could have done to make it work. I'm a one and done guy. I've always been that way. I have conservative roots. And I don't believe in getting married as a longer term relationship. I believe in getting married once and you're there for the rest of your life and you're committed to one another, despite the problems. In fact, the problems and the storms sometimes reveals the beauty of the boat in the water in the first place, right? Instead of it just sitting in the harbor. But so we had a couple of financial adjustments and things like that. And I don't think she was fully prepared. Maybe it was me not communicating enough or in a right way. And I was trying to be protective of her. I didn't want her to feel like I was struggling. I wanted her to feel like I was strong and that I was making massive progress every single day and that we were just around the corner, because I was trying to put her at ease. So a lot of those things I probably, in hindsight, should have done differently. I think me, instead of trying to protect her, just being really open and honest and saying, listen, this is going to happen. I'm passionate about it, but we're going to have to make some adjustments. I think that may have made a difference. I think part of it I don't believe in soulmates. I'll tell you, if I believed in soulmates, then a lot of people are married to someone else's soulmate, right? So
I agree.
Right. So mathematically, soulmates just doesn't make sense. Were we a perfect fit? I'm going to say no, we weren't a perfect fit. Would it have still been worth it to do whatever we could to make it work if both of us felt that way? I believe so. I think that would have been hard work. It would have been uncomfortable. May not have been the easiest relationship ever, but I still feel that way. However, there was so much that I discovered about myself going through that. When it did finally end, it was time for Steve to focus on Steve. Mm. And I'll tell you an interesting thing too, is my passion for LMI did not change. In fact, most people in the business would never have known that I was going through relationship problems. And that's not because I was trying to hide it. It really isn't. It's because I felt alive when I was at the office. And that was the energy that it gave me to do the work that I do. So if somebody would have asked me how my personal relationship was, I would have told them, but it never came up because probably people assumed that everything was perfect in my life because of how excited I was to be at the office and to do what I do.
I think that's okay. So I think what you had just explained is definitely something that I can relate to, and definitely something that other folks can relate to as well. Like, the reality of it is not all relationships are meant to last. That's the truth, right? We do go into them with the hope and the prayer that this is a, you know, like you said, a one and done, and this is a lifelong commitment. However, it does take two to tango, right? Yes. And, you know, it's the reason I wrote my book, right? Why I Divorced My Husband. And this book is not what you think, folks. And the reality is when I was in my marriage with my ex-husband, very similar to you, I saved him from a lot of the stress of what I was going through in terms of my business. Now, different from you is that actually then built in me almost like this solo side of my personality, where I then became sort of this one human over here. And he was like this one human over there, because our lives have become so different, so uniquely different. But I think the reality of it is, you know, having a business is difficult. Being a leader is challenging and rewarding. Having both of those and a relationship can be the most beautiful thing, or it can be the most challenging thing. And I think, you know, if we were to pull a little nugget of wisdom out of there, I think it is about communication and being, you know, uber honest and not trying to really protect anyone. I'm sure there's a way of saying it so it doesn't scare the crap out of non-entrepreneurs. But at the end of the day, it is about being honest and letting them know, you know, hey, I'm in this for the long haul. But it may take 18 months. It may take 3 years. I'm sticking it out though. Are you with me? How can I make this easier on you? What kind of intel do you need on a regular basis to help ease your mind, right?
Absolutely. And one of the things that I've discovered now, again, through my infinite wisdom, is prior to me getting married, the first time I got married, I've always been a very independent person. I have strong opinions. I'm independent. I love to have fun, and I've never needed to have somebody by my side every time I go to a party, let's say. So I'm fairly social. I'm independent. I have a good time. I like being by myself. I like being in a relationship. Both were always kind of the case, right? I didn't need that. But I don't know if it's because of my personality. I sort of got used to people needing me. I thought that's just the norm. You know, everybody that I seem to date is a little bit on the needy side. So I sort of settled into the idea that, well, I guess I'm the type of person that likes to help people. So it just makes sense that I would be in a relationship with somebody that I can help. So that was a mistake as well. And I had made that error so many times. And again, that was me justifying my decisions to actually settle for something less than I deserved, instead of finding somebody out there that doesn't need me either, just wants to be with me and accepts me just for who I am.
And I certainly feel like you have found that in Miss Lori. Like, Lori, again, for those of you who don't know who Lori is an equal entrepreneur. So she is also an entrepreneur and a leader in her own business. She's like a tank. She works out, like, I swear, half of the day. She's got muscles for days and she's super friendly. Like, you have literally met your match, you know, if that is the case, right? Can you share a little bit about sort of that journey? Because again, if previously you had needy people, my assumption is Lori's not a needy person.
So after my divorce, going through self-discovery and feeling really, 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 really weird going out on a date for the first few times, you know, just dating in general felt really odd because I was married for almost 7 years. And in my, however old I was when I got divorced, I guess around whatever it was, it's mid-30s-ish, something like that, late 30s. So one of the things that I discovered about myself is that I kind of like me. Where I was like, I'm okay not being with someone, right? And I that was a major discovery for me. When I started to think about that more and more, then I started to reflect back on what my father said to me when I was 15 years old. And that is, if you can't love yourself, then you can't love someone else. So I settled into the idea. One of the things, I came up with a few philosophies when it comes to dating. All right. One is, I'm okay. What were you going to say?
Oh, I was just going to like encourage you to tell me, but then all of a sudden you were going to tell me. So I'm like, okay, tell me the philosophies. Teach me, wise one.
Happy to share this. This is my philosophies. So one is, I would rather be alone than with the wrong person, right? That's not rocket science to anybody that has been with the wrong person, right? So I'd rather be alone than with the wrong person, but there's a lot of people out there that would answer, I'd rather be with somebody rather than be alone, even if it's the wrong person. And I've asked this question to people and it shocks me when I hear that. So I knew that was true logically. Did I actually believe it up until that point? I don't know. I wasn't ready to believe it maybe, but I suddenly got to the point where I'm like, no, if it takes me 15 years to find somebody that I deserve to be with, then I don't care because I kind of like who I am. So I accepted myself for who I was more than I ever had. And there's always things that we can improve in those areas. I'm not saying that I'm perfect in that area either. But one of the affirmations that I kept saying to myself all the time was, I'm awesome. And if you don't want to take the time to figure that out, then that's okay. Somebody else will, right? And I needed to share that with myself because it was true. And one of the things that I'm sure everybody out there listening will know if you go on dates on a regular basis is that everybody thinks the person sitting in front of them is supposed to be their soulmate. So for me, after my divorce, I was like, not a chance. I'm not going to be a perfect fit for everybody and everybody won't be a perfect fit for me. So I'm not going to try to make that work. So before I would ever go on a date, I would say, I'm awesome. If they're not willing to take the time to figure it out, then that's okay because there's plenty more people that will, right? And as everyone says on a date, no, I shouldn't say everyone. Most people have asked me, at least when I've been on a date years past now, but was, what do you look for in a partner? And I started telling people, I'm not telling you.
Imagine.
And they were like, well, what do you mean? You're not telling me. Well, the last thing that I want to do is give you the perfect picture of what I'm looking for. And then suddenly you become that person.
Like, give them the playbook. Here's the playbook to me. If you match all of these categories, then you are my perfect match. Exactly. And then what happens is, to your point, those people are then becoming and behaving opposite to who they are. And at some point, all the powder comes back out and right, they're going to show their true colors. And that's where relationships go to die.
And if I can say this, and I'm trying to say this in a very respectful manner, I think partially that's what happened in my first marriage. Because I was very open. Like, I was, again, I'm a social person. It was too perfect, too fast. And you can only act like somebody that you're not for so long.
100%.
Like you just said, right? So when that started to happen, I was almost like, what's going on? So that experience plus some other experiences that I've had in my life, I just said, I'm not telling people anymore. And if people don't want to spend time with me, if they get starting to get to know me and I'd like to spend more time with them, but they don't really want to, why would I waste my time? Why do I want to be, this is another one of the philosophies. Why do I want to be around people that don't want to be around me? It's so simple, right? Like, there are plenty of people out there that will want to spend time with me. So if you're not one of them, who cares? You know, good luck to you, right?
So true, but also so hard for people, right? Because we have become a society of people pleasers. We want everyone to like us. You know, I watched my brother and my sister. I apologize if you guys are listening to this, but I'm putting you under the bus. All right, here it goes. I've watched them post something and then go back to see how many people have liked it and commented. And I'm like, who cares? You're not running a business. It's not giving you statistics that's going to help you make money later on today. It's just like who on your friendship circle train has had time in their day to like your post.
Right.
But we have become a society that, you know, that dopamine hit that you get from people liking everything and wanting to be connected to you in all avenues has really, I think, broken down that ability to truly connect with people that you're supposed to connect with, right?
Absolutely. Right?
Like, I think of, well, you and I were talking about this last week, so I'll bring everyone else up to speed. But we were talking about dating and, you know, talking about the fact that I am nowhere near ready to date. But the concept of not trying to behave or be a certain way even throws me for a loop because I'm a pretty authentic person and I'm pretty strong in my own right. But I have definitely, you know, looking back, witnessed moments where somebody had said something like, I don't like X, I don't like Z. And then I go, oh, okay, so don't behave like X or don't behave like Z. And I'm like, what the heck, girl? Like, if you are X, be X all the time so they can self-evaluate for themselves and go, oh, that girl, she's not for me.
Well, that's a perfect example. If they say, I don't like X to you and you know X is a big part of who you are, that person's not for you.
Not for me. Can't change them.
Why pretend that you're not X for that person if you know they don't like that? I mean, it's,
I think it comes down to the fear of loneliness for people. And I, you know, I think it goes back to exactly what you said at the very beginning. I think if you know who you are, you understand your core values, you're not going to be working for crappy employers. You're not going to be in partnerships with people who don't align with you. And you're certainly not going to be trying to fit into a specific box for an intimate partner. And it's all aligned. You know, I don't think there is a difference in who we show up in business and who we show up for our partners. I really do believe, you know, at the end of the day, it's just one big freaking life, yes, right? And so you better get really ooey and gooey and cozy with yourself and love yourself because that's the person you're bringing to every room.
Absolutely. And just to add to that, if you are alone and don't have a relationship right now, anybody out there?
Like me.
And you can't stand it for some reason.
Oh no, I love it.
And I'm not talking to you, obviously, but if you're not in a relationship and it really bothers you that you're not in a relationship, then you need to ask yourself much different questions than why can't I find somebody? The questions that you should be asking is, why am I so uncomfortable when I'm alone? What is it about myself that I don't like? What is it about myself that I don't love? Or what is it about myself that I don't accept? And why do I not really love my own company? And if you can answer those questions, until you can answer those questions, someone else is not going to fill that void for you, which is exactly what we see the vast majority of people do.
So true.
Included for years. I'm not excluded from that. I was a people pleaser for a good part of my life.
So. Oh, absolutely. And I think, you know, again, most of us have been, but I think, you know, in terms of, you know, that if you can't enjoy your company, what's to say anybody else can, right? And so I think there is some really strong lessons that come out of just getting really comfortable with being alone and getting okay with, you know, who you are and what you stand for as a person alone, right? Because that literally, in my belief system, is the foundation to being successful in every business, every leadership role you'll be in, everything you do moving forward, because your personal life affects and dictates your business life, and your business life affects and dictates your personal life. They are synonymous. They are together. So yeah, get it right. Love yourself.
Absolutely. Well, I heard a quote, and you know I'm a quote guy, but I heard a quote on TED Talk at one point, and the guy was talking about relationships, and he said, and he was relating it to business as well, and he said, listen, in order for you to be successful in a relationship, you can't find your partner interesting. Like, how good does that sound? Well, let's get married because I think you're interesting. right? That sounds super ludicrous, right? You got to be like passionate about business. Just like in a marriage relationship, you can't find your partner interesting. You got to be passionate about that person, so much so that you feel like you can't live without that person, or not can't live without. I'm using all kinds of societal norm words and phrases, that you would love to be around that person for the rest of your life. Then that's when you propose marriage to that person. In business, it's the same. You can't find what you want to do for the rest of your life interesting. I can't be kind of interested in it. I got to be passionate about it. It's got to be something that I know I'm going to change the world in this way because of the work that I'm doing. And most people go through life looking for things they're interested in instead of things that they're passionate about.
I like that separation. Go for what you're passionate for. You need to be passionate about the relationships you're in. You need to be passionate about the business that you pursue, passionate about the career that you're taking on, the education you're going to take. You don't need to be just interested, because things that are interesting get dull after they're not interesting anymore.
Can you imagine a world? That's true. Can you imagine a world where everybody is passionate about what they're doing? Just imagine that world.
Oh, I totally can imagine that world. And I think about, you know, right now we're living through a pandemic, and you imagine if that many more people took the time, where there has been some pauses and some quietness, to figure out what they're passionate about. And they took this time as an opportunity to go build epic businesses that employ people that are, you know, that's their passion. Like, what a world we would live in, folks.
It's true.
Oh, it would be so good. So good. All right. Two final questions for you before I let you go and I go have my Donair pizza, because I'm having a cheat day today.
Excellent. Okay.
All right. Question number one. If you are on this side of the mic, what question should I have asked you that I didn't, because maybe I messed up?
That's a great question too. I don't think everybody's ever asked me that. Were you going to ask me question number two as well, and then you want me to answer them both at the same time?
No, because then I could be like, I was right and telepathic, and like I could boost my ego a bit. So just you go, you tell me what you think I should ask.
That's a hard one to answer on the fly.
Question I tell you.
I would have asked, what is... See, now you stumped me.
Well, that's okay. It just means I did my job really well. And I asked you all the questions I was supposed to ask, which is amazing. Great job, Terri-Ann. Thank you.
I think, the only thing that you could have asked me is when the next EPP is, so that we can, I'm just kidding.
Oh, you know what? But EPL is next.
EPL. Yes. EPL. Yeah. Yes.
Why don't you at least explain to people what EPP is? Because we're both talking in like code right now.
LMEs, we call it. So LMI is Leadership Development Coaching. That's what we do. We have 17 different programs. EPP stands for Effective Personal Productivity. That is a 6-month program that is really focused on working smarter, not harder. And the way I like to describe it, it's low-hanging fruit. So all of the attitudes and behaviors that are in your life that are holding you back, that are easily changeable, the self-limiting beliefs, and things like that, if they are changed. And we all know what we need to do in order to be successful. It's just that rarely do people do it. So this program is about changing your attitudes and your behaviors to move you towards success, so that you can have a life where you're moving towards your full potential every single day. 0.1% outside of your comfort zone. So that's the EPP program.
Awesome. It's an amazing program. So I'm actually about to graduate from that program. I like saying graduate, because it just always feels like I'm doing something really cool, probably while you do graduation. So I'm about to graduate from the EPP program. And for someone like myself, who's been in business for, you know, 16 years, I kind of always felt like I was a high achiever and, you know, I got shit done and mover and a shaker. What I realized going through the EPP program was there was a lot of fires, a lot of stuff that I was doing or putting out or spending my time on that wasn't where I actually should be spending my time. So I definitely am the queen of delegation, but I have become like the empress of delegation since taking EPP, because what, you know, there are things that don't make me money. There are things that are not in my genius zone. There are things that I was doing where I was trying to solve other people's issues and problems, where really I should be empowering them to solve them themselves. And I'm talking about in my personal life and in my business life. So I definitely think the EPP program is it's a huge foundational program for anybody who's in management, leadership, or entrepreneurship. Like if you're working alongside anybody else or running a enterprise, this is a program you need to be taking. So that was my little plug for you. You didn't even ask.
Awesome. Well, I would much prefer you introduce it than me anyway, because you see it on the other side of the desk.
I do. Okay. Final question. Dun-da-da-da. All right. What does perspective shifting mean to you?
Perspective shifting. Well, fastest, easiest way for me to answer that question is that whenever I have a group of, let's say 10 people in a room, I ask them how many different perspectives are in this room. When people are being honest, they will say 10 perspectives, right? It doesn't matter if people grew up in the same household, their perspective will still be different. The example that I really like is if I took a kid from South Central Los Angeles and dropped them in Moncton and just put a tracksuit on them and took away all their ability to communicate, and I took somebody from Moncton and dropped them in South Central Los Angeles in the middle of the night, and same thing, just a tracksuit, took away their cell phones, they had no way to communicate. Gunfire all over the place, bars on the windows. On Crenshaw Boulevard is the most dangerous street in all of North America, or at least it used to be. I'm assuming it still is. I ask people all the time, how quickly would you get out of there if that was you that I dropped off from Crenshaw Boulevard? And they'd say, well, I'd be like lightning getting out of there, right? It's some flash down the street. And I say, well, how quickly do you think the person that I took from that neighborhood and put them in Moncton, how quickly do you think they would leave? Oh, well, they wouldn't bother. Why would they? Their life would be so much better here. That is a matter of perspective. In fact, the person from South Central Los Angeles being dropped off in Moncton would likely get out of here just as quickly, because they may not feel as in danger as we might in Crenshaw, but it would be so outside the norm, they would be very uncomfortable. So I guess my method to my madness when I'm talking about perspective shift is that for us to understand that everyone, even if they're close to you, their perspective is different. And if we understand that the only way for us to shift our perspective is actually to understand the perspectives of others and take the time to really get to know other people, then it will be impossible for us to shift our perspective. And the value to that would be leadership, as John Maxwell said, is influence. If we really want to influence people, we really need to understand their perspective. And we need to shift ours in order to get there. So I don't know if that answers your question, but that's the first thing that came to my mind.
It totally, because it's your perspective. That's the beauty of this question. It's why I love it so much. But what I really like of how you said that was, you know, at the end of the day, I think having an open mind, an ability to perspective shift, it sort of lowers your ability to judge, right? I don't think we're ever going to remove judgment. We are humans. It's what we do. It's sort of the way in which we work. But, you know, for us to instantly think that the youth from Los Angeles, in the scariest area of North America, coming into little old Moncton, New Brunswick, and thinking that they would just be like, you know, glory day, like everything's just amazing. And the reality is they've just been taken out of their comfort zone. And this looks scary to them in different ways, I'm sure. But, you know, I think it does. Having that ability to perspective shift and look at it from a different angle allows you to lower your judgment.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much, Steve.
My pleasure.
It's always a joy to have you on for an interview or, you know, a video cast or whatever we're doing, because you're so insightful. You have lots of stories. I love your rawness and your ability to just be sort of to the point and true. So really appreciate you. Thank you so much for taking your time out today. And I hope you have a wonderful evening.
Thank you so much. And save me a slice of that pizza. That sounds delicious.
Oh, I don't know about that. All right.